Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Ford bringing back two shifts of workers to its Chicago assembly plant as it starts resuming production. Tyson Foods' meatpacking plant in Logansport has resumed limited operations. Indianapolis police are responding following two fatal police-involved shootings. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with U.S. Congressman Pete Fisklosky. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The state-mandated closure of Northwest Indiana's casino industry is likely to continue until at least mid-June, according to new guidance from the Indiana Gaming Commission. In a brief statement, the IGC said the reopening of the region's five casinos and the eight other state-regulated gaming properties across Indiana probably won't begin until Phase 4 of Governor Eric Holcomb's Back on Track plan, tentatively scheduled for June 14th. The Times reports the governor's Back on Track plan is a gradual reopening of Indiana's economy amid the coronavirus pandemic that aims to get things back to normal by July 4th, provided the anticipated increase in new COVID-19 cases due to the reopening does not overwhelm the capacity of hospitals to treat them. In Phase 4, Indiana retailers and offices can reopen to full capacity. Restaurants can offer dine-in service at 75% capacity. Bars and nightclubs can reopen to 50% capacity. And other cultural, entertainment, and tourism businesses can reopen at 50% capacity. Since the state ordered casinos closed March 16th, approximately 5,000 employees of casinos in Hammond, East Chicago, Gary, and Michigan City have been furloughed and are no longer receiving a paycheck. Likewise, the Illinois Gaming Board has shuttered all casinos and licensed video gaming in the state until further notice, in part because Governor J.B. Pritzker's Restore Illinois plan is expected to lag Indiana's reopening by several months.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Ford is going to bring back two shifts of workers to the Chicago assembly plant as it starts resuming production across North America on May 18th. The Dearborn, Michigan-based automaker plans to recall 12,000 auto workers who can't work remotely as it takes a phased approach to reopening with enhanced safety protocols aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus. The restart of auto plants would be a major boon for the region's steel mills, which had warned of thousands of layoffs along Northwest Indiana's lakeshore as orders dried up. The Times reports, as part of the plan, Ford's parts depots will restart on May 11th and then assembly plants on May 18th. That will include the Chicago assembly plant and the Chicago stamping plant. The Lear seat-making factory in Hammond and other local parts suppliers would also have to reopen by then to make just-in-time automotive production possible again. Everyone in Ford plants will have to wear face masks, face shields, or safety glasses with side shields with assembly line jobs where social distancing isn't possible. Every Ford employee will get a care kit that will include face masks and other items meant to keep them healthy. Employees who can work remotely still will during the global pandemic.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Indianapolis Police Department provided updates on two fatal police shootings in under 8 hours. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports.
In the first incident, the department said Drajon Reed was driving recklessly when police started pursuing the car. Reed streamed the chase live on Facebook while thousands of people watched. On the northwest side of Indianapolis, Reed left the car. Police say there was a short chase, an officer fired a taser that appeared to be ineffective, and that gunshots were exchanged. Police Chief Randall Taylor, who was involved in the initial chase, promised a comprehensive investigation.
Let me be clear. The These comments are unacceptable and unbecoming of our police department. We will be pursuing immediate disciplinary action against that officer.
Less than 8 hours later, police were called to an apartment building on the northwest side. Police say a man shot at officers with a rifle and they returned fire, killing him. As the police investigations continued, hundreds of protesters marched through downtown Indianapolis to protest the shootings. For WFYI News, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Governor Eric Holcomb apologized after he was photographed last weekend out in public without proper COVID-19 safety procedures. A selfie posted on an Indiana woman's Facebook page and shared widely by a Democratic Party Twitter account shows Holcomb taking a photo with the woman and her daughter without a mask and well within 6 feet of each other. In a statement, Holcomb says he left his mask in the car when retrieving takeout from a local restaurant, what he calls a lapse in his usual vigilance. He apologized to healthcare professionals and every Hoosier working to slow the spread of COVID-19. He calls the incident a, quote, lesson learned that even a quick photo requires following experts' guidance to wear a mask in public. In a statement, the Indiana Democratic Party called Holcomb's actions hypocritical and selfish.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Governor Eric Holcomb says places of worship will serve as a test or control group under his reopening plan. Holcomb's guidelines still impose restrictions on businesses and recreation areas, keeping some closed and mandating capacity limits on others. But religious institutions can now hold worship services without limitations. Holcomb says he thought they would be the most responsible group to fully reopen.
But I did say that we needed those church leaders to be responsible for their congregations.
Holcomb adds that what happens with those houses of worship and their impact on COVID-19 cases will inform the state going forward.
If we can manage this, this gives us a lot of confidence in some other arenas as well.
The state still urges religious institutions to follow social distancing and mask wearing guidelines or to hold virtual services whenever possible.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Bureau of Motor Vehicle locations across the state are starting to reopen to more in-person customers this week with a goal to open all branches by Memorial Day. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the BMV has only been open during the pandemic for truckers who needed their commercial driver's licenses.
55 BMV branches are open statewide for in-person business, with the goal of having one open branch within an hour of every Hoosier. BMV Commissioner Peter Lacey says visits are by appointment only.
We're going to have a 30-minute barrier between each customer so we can make sure that we wipe down all hard surfaces between customers coming into our branch.
Lacey still urges people to conduct business online when they can and reminds them the governor extended expiration dates through May 22nd.
There is no need to feel pressure either on a driver's license or on an expiration of a license plate to go into the BMV right now.
Lacey says those expiration dates might be extended again in the coming weeks. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Many Indiana schools are waiting for answers even after Governor Eric Holcomb wrote out his plan for reopening the state. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports schools are making tentative plans for things like graduation, but still don't know when they can bring students back and how.
School buildings are still closed through June 30th, and that hasn't changed, even with the governor's state reopening plan. Schools can and have been using buildings for some essential things like meals and childcare, and the governor's new order is allowing some schools to make tentative plans for graduation and for students to pick up their belongings. Vigo County Schools spokesperson Bill Riley says it helps, but even that could change.
things have to go well for that timeline that the governor put out to be followed.
Schools have been told they'll likely stay remote through summer school, but the final decision has yet to be made. Governor Holcomb says he'll decide in July when and how schools can bring kids back to campus. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Tyson Foods meatpacking plants in Logansport resumed limited operations Thursday. 2 weeks ago, Tyson temporarily closed the plant after employees there tested positive for COVID-19. Officials at the only hospital in the county, Logansport Memorial, say over 1,000 of Cass County's 1,469 COVID-19 cases can be traced to the local plant. Tyson officials say they've put in place enhanced safety precautions, including a mobile health clinic to provide testing and daily screenings, providing every employee with protective facial coverings and requiring their use, and using infrared thermometers to check employees' temperatures as they come to work. Before the temporary shutdown, the Logansport plant produced over 3 million pounds of pork daily. Tyson denied requests for an interview.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
There's still money left for businesses that have yet to apply for the second round of loans from the Paycheck Protection Program. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Adam Pinsker tells us that the SBA is trying to make sure there is money to go around for everyone who needs it.
As of May 1st, the SBA processed more than 31,000 loans for Hoosier businesses worth a combined $2 billion. Unlike the first round of loan money that ran out back in March, Small Business Administration Regional Director Rob Scott says the SBA blocked out a time for only medium and small-sized businesses to apply for money this time around.
There's still money left, over $135 billion that's left in PPP appropriations from Congress.
Scott says the SBA is still in the process of providing guidance to lenders and borrowers on compliance so the loans can be forgiven. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Adam Pinsker.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Special education students are disproportionately challenged by school building closures. Their needs include speech therapy, behavior therapy, and assistance with learning disabilities, and they rely on one-on-one time with educators. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Eric Weddle talks with experts about the three things families should know.
Anxiety, fear, worst-case scenarios, those are some of the thoughts and emotions Kim Dodson hears from parents of students with special needs after school buildings closed statewide.
I do think that families' anxiety right now is really high.
Dodson is the executive director of the ARC of Indiana, an advocacy group for Hoosiers with disabilities. She says parents of special needs students in grades K to 12 are grappling with many issues, and the fear of their children falling behind in academics or ability while learning remotely at home is top of that list.
You know, I really encourage families to just take a deep breath and to realize first and foremost, the health and safety of their child is what really truly matters. So if you look into your child's eyes and you know that they are being fed, that they are healthy, they're not outside catching the virus or anything like that, that's a good place to start. Is it good that they are not making educational progress right now or that they might regress? No, it's not. But at the end of the day, those are things that we are going to be able to make strides towards in the future.
Dodson and other advocates say nearly all schools are doing the best they can as they pivot to remote learning. But they also say families should still expect and demand students get the help and support they need. Here are three things to know. One, federal and state laws that require schools to follow IEPs, individualized education plans, and all 504 plans have not changed. The IEP is a document agreed upon by a teacher and parent that explains what specialized instruction and services a student gets. A 504 plan details what accommodations a student needs to be academically successful. Some examples, the plan could say a student needs directions read aloud to them, or a student needs more time taking a test, or speech therapy twice a week. Margaret A. Jones is the executive director of the Disability Legal Services of Indiana. She says a student school must be doing all they can to follow these plans.
We just need to figure out how are those going to be implemented during this time. So the services might look a little different. Instructional telephone calls.
Point number two, the annual meeting about your child, called a case conference committee, should still happen, now as a video or a phone conference. This is a time for a student, teacher, and parent to evaluate what's working and what's not, or set new goals in the IEP.
Department of Ed is really requiring the schools to still try as best as possible to meet those timelines.
That's Mimi Hubers, an attorney with Disability Legal Services of Indiana.
Try to change the IEP to reflect what's actually happening in these times.
Three, parents and caregivers should know their school district's continuous learning plan. Now, this is a document the governor required all schools to submit to the state. It explains how learning is happening during the pandemic, like if students will use paper packets at home or Google Classroom. It should also address special education. Jones says if a caregiver does not have the right resources at home, like a laptop computer, to follow the learning plan, tell the school.
I don't have a lot of resources at home. I just have my phone, or I just have one computer and I need that from work. My student needs to have these services, so can you provide that technology?
Advocates say the Indiana Department of Education is staying on top of these and other issues. It has a website of documents and recommendations to help special education families navigate learning accommodations during this time. Some of it is even updated daily. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Weddle.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with U.S. Representative Pete Visklosky.
Congressman Pete Visklosky has been very busy. Despite the coronavirus pandemic, he's been back here in Northwest Indiana, of course, since the House of Representatives is on recess because of the pandemic. But he's been busy while he's been home, and we've had a chance to catch up with him to find out what he has been doing lately and covering issues, which, of course, range from the pandemic and how we're trying to help deal with it, to Hoosier politics. Here's our conversation.
If you will cover some of the points that you mentioned here in your report concerning the pandemic from this last week, bring us up to date on the work on the small business assistance that's still needed and whatever measures that you see that the House is going to take up here as they continue to deal with the pandemic.
Yeah, we remain very concerned about the issue of small businesses, both in places like Northwest Indiana, whether they might be a restaurant, public service, but also looking ahead to the people who do contracts with the United States government. I chair the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, for example, and I don't want to be dismissive, but Lockheed Martin will always be taking care of themselves. It's that distributor and Tier 3 and 4 provider that we're very concerned about, making sure that they can be economically viable going forward. So we are looking essentially for a fourth iteration as far as assistance for small businesses and to begin that economic recovery. It's impossible to project today exactly when that will be considered. My sense is probably within the next 2 weeks.
Okay. What's the status, you think, as far as another stimulus check program going out again? I know for a lot of people are still haven't gotten their first ones that are out. That's happening now, but I know there's a discussion about the possibility of maybe another measure that may come along the way.
There's been discussion, but I would not want to raise expectations at this time given the uncertainty of that issue.
Okay. I know the main concern is making sure that that SNAP benefits and the like for people that need to have the additional supplement to feed their families and keep themselves going is all part of it, too.
Yeah, we really are. And one of the things, again, on our subcommittee in particular, because our focus is on defense, but each of our subcommittees are doing the same thing, is who is dependent upon this type of assistance. And while people making the distribution may suggest everything is fine, let's make some calls to those people further down the system. How is it working today? We cannot change any of the legislation we have passed to date. But going forward, if problems persist as far as those monies getting to people who need it the most, we ought to be able to fix that in the next tranche of legislation.
I know that in the House they've talked about efforts to try to implement some enhanced workplace health and safety rules. How do things stand on that?
That is a work in progress. I would point out that one of the 11 subcommittees on the Appropriations Committee, in which I serve, is going to hold a virtual hearing this week. It'll be the second attempt in the House to see how that process works. So again, you make sure that you have that social distancing. In the District of Columbia, you see cases continuing to increase. In the state of Maryland, cases increase. I have instructed my staff, whether we're in session this coming week or not, that they should not return physically to their work in D.C. until that closure is lifted. Obviously, for so much of what we can do it electronically and in conference calls. But the first point of departure here, whether it's House employees, that person living in Gary, Indiana, or Lowell, don't get sick. Be healthy. Because if we don't contain the pandemic, we're never going to enjoy a successful economic recovery. To piecemeal this and ignore the health problem that got us in this situation in the first place would be a fundamental mistake.
Do you think that unfortunately the COVID-19 crisis that we're all still in here in Indiana and in Northwest Indiana in particular, it has made things a little bit more difficult than perhaps maybe 6 months ago you had thought?
Very much so, and so much of the electoral process is interacting with people, and obviously people are going to have to be very ingenious and aggressive in how they do that in a safe, viable fashion. What I would simply do is indicate that as citizens, we do have privileges in society, but we have responsibilities. And one of them is to judge candidates running for offices, whether they be county, whether they be state or federal, and then act on that judgment and vote. We have an election for both parties, primaries, on June 2nd. I would encourage everyone, regardless of their party, regardless of their persuasion, or the candidates who they support, to please apply for that absentee ballot. Please send that in. Don't leave it to chance, because in Indiana we will have only 1 week of early voting, and then you have Election Day on June 2nd. Very concerned about turnout because of the health crisis. There is a way to vote safely, and that is absentee. So again, I encourage everyone listening to this to please get that ballot and please exercise your right to vote.
Let's turn to the Hoosier politics. I know that you've had some thoughts about how the Indiana State Democratic Party is going to do the convention this time around, a little different than we know in the past. It's going virtual. What are your thoughts about that? And in particular, maybe urging Democrats to support the candidate for president.
Yeah. I appreciate that the state party is looking to make sure, again, everyone is in good health, but that democratic process continues, because we have a very important election this fall. So I certainly support what they are doing. As far as the ticket, I have endorsed Vice President Biden for president. I have also indicated at the state level that I support State Senator Karen Talion, who I have an immense respect for the position of Attorney General in Indiana. I myself will not be an active participant since I'm not a statewide candidate or a candidate at all. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I am not a delegate to the state convention, but certainly would encourage those who are to support her candidacy. Okay.
Let's take a couple minutes and take a look at the future. Although I know there's nothing that is a very set in stone, so to speak, about what your plans are after the end of the calendar year and you step down from your office in the Indiana, the U.S. House of Representatives, come back to Indiana with hope. What are your thoughts about what you want to do after the term of office ends and you turn things over to your successor?
What I tell people is I was born in Gary, Indiana. I live in Gary, Indiana today. This is my home. I graduated from college in Gary, Indiana. As far as plans, I indicate to people that I still have a job to do for 8 months, and I'm very serious about that, to make sure some of these transformational investments we worked on, like the South Shore are completed, that my committee work is done properly. But looking ahead, I would simply tell you that the joke in our family is that I will die before I read all the books I have bought. I tell people I will die trying to do that. What else the future holds right now, I just wouldn't want to speculate.
Have you thought or have you been approached by anybody about joining some of your colleagues who have stepped down from public office and gone into academia?
At this point, I have an open mind, but again, much more focused on the next 8 months of my job responsibility. I say one of the very nice things about the way this has happened, I have 14 months to let it wash over me, see what opportunities are out there, and then make my own personal choice. But at this point, I have a job to do.
Congressman Visosky, thank you very much for spending time with us to talk today, and glad to see that you're safe and well, and hope you stay that way.
And I hope everyone else, again, exercises great caution and continues in good health as well.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.